Thankfully, we hear more and more about mental health now that we did a decade ago. In a station like ours, the struggles that footballers in particular have faced and been prepared to confront publicly have lifted the kind of previous veil of silence surrounding depression and anxiety pretty significantly, I reckon. So when we hear of any player prepared to share their story, I, for one, am really happy to provide a platform for those stories to be heard. One such story crossed our desk the other day, and we're absolutely delighted that Kate McCarthy, lion-turned-tiger in the AFLW, has been good enough to share her story with us today. Kate, thanks for your time.
Hey, Andy, just clarifying, I'm actually a Saint, not a Tiger, but that's
oh
fine.
Oh, my God. I got that. the massive player movements got me completely confused. It seemed like everybody else was going to Richmond, so I just assumed you were one of those as well.
Yeah, I just thought I was
too. Saint. Hey.
That's it.
Thanks for correcting me on that one. Before I get stuck into the story that you told us on the Exclusive Insight website and talk to you about the impact of Nacho, I want to know how your nose is. Last time I saw you, it was about a foot wide across your face, and you're in all sorts of trouble. How is your nose?
Yeah, it's all right. So probably about 2 months after our season finished, I went and got it all fixed up. So I got surgery on it just because it was more the breathing more than anything that was a big pain. So yeah, got fixed up, and let's just hope that in round one next year it doesn't get broken again, because I feel like I'm not going through that again. That surgery was horrific.
How much damage was done to it?
Well, I've broken it 3 times now, but I think that last one was definitely the worst, and the surgeon said that it was a lot more significant than he thought it was, and that there's just bones in my nose are just shattered everywhere. So he's hoping that they reform a little bit straighter, but yeah, he said he's never seen a nose as battered as mine.
How scary was it at the time? It looked really bad. I mean, it was a heavy collision. You know, the force of the Carlton player's head that sort of flew back into your nose was pretty significant. It was pretty scary at the moment at the time that it occurred, Kate.
Yeah, it was. I knew as soon as it happened that I'd broken my nose again, because it was just similar to the times that I'd done it. But I didn't realise how much worse it was this time, because the doctor said that it was kind of like, it was pretty much sideways on my nose and it was just pouring out with blood. And on the sideline, he had to straighten it out, which luckily he didn't tell me he was doing. but once he'd straightened it all out, it stopped the bleeding. And then I kind of was down in the rooms and said, oh, look, it feels like it's sore, but it's not that bad. Can I go back on if you tape it all up? And he's like, yeah, look, there's nothing stopping you going back on. So I went out. I don't think I was too handy in the last 10 minutes, but I did my best for the team. So,
well, you tried your hardest. There's no doubt about that. Why the move? I'm keen to talk to you about your column that you wrote for Exclusive Insight, and it's a terrific column that you've written, and I think it helps, hopefully, and I'm sure one of the reasons you've written it is to not only tell your story but help others who might find themselves in a similar position. But the decision to move, there was a lot of movement at the end of season 3. What was the thinking for you in leaving Brisbane? Such a favourite of the Brisbane Lions in the first 3 years up there. What was the thinking for you to seek another challenge elsewhere?
Well, I guess after the first week or so of being offered with the Lions, I was pretty keen to re-sign. I wasn't unhappy at the club, and I've always loved the Lions, and they've given me the first opportunity that I've had to play AFL football. And then the Saints sort of came to me after I wasn't in the first batch of re-signings with the Lions, and they presented me a really good offer. And I've always wanted to get into the media side of things, whether that's when I'm finished football or during my football career as well. And they offered me a really, really enticing job with so many opportunities off field. And I think that's the big thing that for us is sort of semi-professional athletes, we only play football for 6 months of the year that we're paid for, and then the rest of the year we need to find some work or do what we sort of need to do away from football, and that opportunity that they presented me was something that I've been looking for at the Lions, and they unfortunately just didn't have the capability of providing it, and for me I saw that as a massive opportunity, because when I finished playing football, or even during my footballing career for the other 6 months, it's something that I really want to do. So, yeah, it was kind of an opportunity that I couldn't really refuse.
Is it a sign to you of the growth in the league and a sign of the commitment that clubs, AFL clubs, are making to the women's game, that these opportunities are starting to present themselves to seemingly quite a few girls in the AFLW at the moment?
Yeah, definitely. And I think they recognise that we need, I mean, the reason that most of us would move clubs is because we need a job to go with that. And I think that's providing a platform for clubs that are, I guess, able to lure other girls from other clubs to move to their club as well, because it's not just, obviously the football wage, there's not much room to move because we're all on tiers within our club. So really there's not a whole lot of difference or point of difference from club to club, but jobs outside of football, and particularly in the media, there's a lot of us that want to do that and get into it. And we see a lot of the ex-men's players or the current men's players doing it as well. And I think we think, well, if they can do it, why can't we?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's, you know, it's such a period of growth at the moment. It's great that, you know, clubs are seeing a real future in expanding the networks and, you know, the framework of their footy club by finding positions within them and around the edges for people like yourself. It's a terrific sign that things are heading clearly in a really good direction. Take us inside why you decided to write the column that you wrote. I said in the intro, if I've got your footy club that you've gone too wrong, I stand by everything else I said there. I think it really helps people, I think, and we always get a lot of feedback. It really helps people when people who are playing footy, men and women, at the highest level, tell their stories of dealing with depression and anxiety, and you've done that in a column, and you've talked about how you sort of navigated your way through it. Why did you feel the need to write this column, Kate?
Well, first of all, I think since I scored that goal and did the end for Nitro, a few people thought I was a bit weird that I was dedicating a goal to my dog. Right. So I thought I needed to clear that up a little bit, right, with the role that he played in it. But also, I mean, I'm someone that's, I guess, I think most people in their life, I think everyone in their life really, has at some point struggled with some mental health issues. And I have no problem with talking about mine in the way that I think that if I talk about mine, maybe other people aren't uncomfortable to talk about theirs, or even just take a little bit of reassurance in the fact that seemingly I'm someone that's playing AFL at the top of their game, and like I'm suffering from mental health as well as them. So it's not a big taboo subject for me, and I think that's something from someone of this generation. Sort of, we've always been, or people around my age have always been comfortable to talk to one another about what's going on. And I think until you talk to someone, the weight isn't really lifted. So if you're trying to keep everything in and deal with everything yourself, it's just causing you more harm in the end. And just simply talking to someone, anyone, about it can really help. And I hope that if me sharing my story helps people to realise that, hey, I just need to go and see someone or go and speak to someone, whether they're a medical professional or not, and that can help, well, then I'm glad that I wrote the article at the end of the day.
Tell us about the first step that you took and the first person you spoke to, and the challenge that might have been behind you actually, you know, stumping up the courage to do that.
Yeah, well, I think it was sort of around, I guess our season goes from November to March, and it was probably the few months after that first season finished that I was feeling horrible. And I guess at that point, kind of football is a long way away from your thoughts, and from that's our really our only time off. And then it sort of rolled around to June, July, and I hadn't done any training. I hadn't really done a lot at all. And then it got to August, and we started to get our pre-season programs for the next season that was coming up. And I didn't want to do any of it. I couldn't think of anything worse than going for a run or going and kicking a footy at that stage. And then it sort of got to September, and I was like, oh my God, pre-season's only 2 months away, and I am so out of condition, I really need to go and speak to someone about this, because yep, it's not normal for me to feel this way about football. It's something that I love, and for me to feel this way, yeah, I need to go and speak to someone. So I went straight to the club doctor, and he really helped. And I knew at the time that I had depression because I'd sort of been diagnosed with it previously when I'd first finished school. And I knew that going to see him would help. And then after that, he sort of referred me on to our sports psych, and I went and spoke to her. And I think just that initial step of going to see someone, it's scary, but I always know that it's going to help. So yeah, knowing that you're taking a big step to go and talk to someone, but at the end of the day, it is going to help. Whether you go there and they give you medication, whether you go there and they give you a treatment plan or a care plan, just telling someone about it makes you feel so much better.
We know through feedback that we get on, you know, radio stations like this, that the minute somebody like you talks about it, it invariably helps people out there. And people are searching for ways to navigate their way through it. Kate, clearly speaking to somebody is important. Anybody who is a dog owner or a cat owner, I suspect for that matter, knows how you can just have this incredible bond with the animal, and it feels like the animal knows you somehow. It becomes intuitive and they respond. Tell us about how the relationship with your dog, and this might be a trigger for people who are battling with stuff out there. Tell us how your relationship with your dog became as fundamentally as important as it did to you.
Well, I was living on my own at the time, so if I living with family or with a partner, I think it would have been a little bit different. But it was just Nacho and I, basically, and there'd be days where I wouldn't leave the house, and then he'd come up to me and look a little bit energetic and bring his ball over to me or drag his lead over, and I was like, oh, I probably should take him out. Like, he needs to go out for a walk, or he needs to go to the park. And even just by doing that, I mean, I'm out talking to other people at the dog park about their dogs, or I'm taking him out for a walk and I've got a coffee and I'm interacting with other people. And there's something about doing things, I think, with your dog that makes you feel like you're not doing it alone. So some people are real. I have a bit of an issue with doing things completely on my own, but as long as I've got Nacho, I don't feel completely on my own.
That's great.
So he just comes with me places, and I don't know, there's something so unconditional about like an animal's love that it doesn't matter if you've been out for 10 minutes or if you've been out all day. As soon as you get home, they're so excited to see you, and you're literally like the light of their life. And having Nacho when I didn't really feel like I had a lot else, which wasn't true. I mean, I had my family, and all I had to do was say the word and they would have been there for me.
Of course.
But telling them was a big issue. So just having him there every day for cuddles at night or taking him for a walk during the day, he literally saved my life, I think. Like, he kept me happy in times where I couldn't see anything else good in the world, really.
I don't know what it's like to find yourself in that kind of place, and there are degrees, obviously, that people find themselves in, and, you know, seeking help is the most important thing to do, Kate. But I've always been a dog owner, and if you are one of those people who feels completely isolated, it's worth having a read of Kate McCarthy's piece at exclusiveinsight.com.au. But think about getting a dog. Yeah, it's just the reason I'm talking to you is to hear you tell your story. But if people can't find a way out, and they may never have thought about this before, then hopefully if you're listening to this chat, this might be an idea for you, and you never know. It might be profoundly important to you. It just might be one of those things that helps people through, Kate.
Yeah, definitely. And like I don't think anything in the world would love you more than a dog or a cat, really, when you're their owner. You're their everything.
Exactly. It's a great message, and thank you for writing your piece. I think hopefully a lot of people read it and find something in there. I'm sure they will if they read it and they need some help. They'll find something in there that can just give them a little, you know, a helping hand along the way. Just last one before I do let you go. I mean, you're still up in Brisbane, and you're going to be playing footy down here. What's your balance going to be like between now and the start of AFLW4? Will you be playing any state league footy? Will you come down and play any VFLW footy for the Saints? How are you going to balance that?
Yeah, look, that's a great question at the moment. I'm trying to sort of figure all that out. I think the general idea when I first signed with the Saints was to play state league footy up here and then move down. But I guess it's looking a little bit more enticing to come down and play VFL with the girls that I'm going to be ultimately most of them playing the AFLW season with. And I just need to sort of sort out a job and a few other things to sort of get down there before the season starts. And if I can work that out, then, yeah, I'll be in Melbourne probably in the next couple of months or so and playing VFL football.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing you down here. Good on you for writing that piece. Thanks for coming on this afternoon and having a chat about it. We really appreciate it.
No worries. And also, Andy, thanks for everything that you've done for women's football as well, and even just getting out there and running for Carlton and everything like that, it gives the public and a lot of us women as well a really, really great example of how someone that's so big in AFL can take such notice of us and help us out so much.
I'm not that big, Kate, but I love being part of it. I love being part of it. So the joy is all mine to be a tiny part of it, and I think it's a really valuable and outstanding element to footy, and I can't wait to see what it's going to become, and it's a joy watching you play your footy with a smile on your face. May there be a whole lot more of it. Good luck. We'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, Andy. Chat soon.
Good on you, Kate McCarthy. Lion turned saint, not tiger. Look, if you are struggling, read the piece by all means. There's a lot of good places and services available to you. We say this all the time. Beyondblue.org.au is one place to go, and Lifeline. There's always someone there who's prepared to talk to you. 13, 11, 14. And I appreciate Kate coming on for the chat.